The mission of the church is to comfort the disturbed and to disturb the comfortable. And last week we said that the word is picnic and not nitpick, indicating that people have a strong tendency to direct their anger and frustration toward the church as a scapegoat, whereas in all honesty it should be directed to the real cause, which is usually elsewhere, with spouse or children or job or sexuality, usually some intangible element of life. A psychologist a few years ago named John Coter did a study of why people left the church. Now, all the people in the study were Catholics in graduate school at secular universities who had 16 years of Catholic education before that. 16 years of Catholic education, all of them. The way Professor Coter designed the study, half of them still described themselves as Catholics, and the other half did not. Now, those who described themselves as Catholic viewed the church as a more or less friendly, benign organization. Those people who had left the Catholic Church saw the church as a hostile and punitive organization. Now, how to explain the difference? They all had had 16 years of Catholic education. Professor Coter discovered that among almost all of those who no longer thought of themselves as Catholic, there was always a background of conflict, trouble, difficulty in their family life, The young people, he said, because of their psychological experiences as children at home, were always predisposed to focus on those things in the church that were unlikable. Whereas those people who had happy childhoods were predisposed to focus on all the things in the church that were likable. Professor Coter's book entitled On the Border is the kind of study that all professional sociologists take seriously, and yet priests and parents unfortunately somehow never seem to hear about it. But if ever there was confirmation of what Jesus said in today's gospel about scandalizing little children, or the new translation, scandalizing simple believers, this study proves how right he was down through the centuries. Young people not only acquire their religious knowledge, attitudes, patterns of acting from their parents, they are also profoundly affected religiously by the way their parents relate to each other day in and day out. It is not enough that parents give good religious education, good religious example to their children, and see to it that they get good religious teaching. It is also essential for the religious development of the child that the parents at home, day in and day out, do everything they possibly can to be tender with each other, to be loving, to show their affection, to be patient with each other, and unexploitive with one another. In fact, what parents do to one another is probably more important in the religious education of children than anything that can happen in school or in religious instruction classes. Even more important than anything that parents would say at home by way of explicit religious instruction. All of you know that is simply a truism that the family is the most important factor as the religious educator. But what Professor Coder's book says, and also a recent book by Professor William McCready, a recent book entitled The Faith of Our Fathers, these books have taught us all that the most important form of religious education that goes on in the family is the way that the husband and wife act toward each other. It means that the parents can give their children the most expensive religious education available anywhere in the world. They can go on preaching to the children in season and out about all the different aspects of the Catholic faith. They can choose to use either the oldest and most traditional of religious education methods, or they can choose the newest and most progressive. But if the parents' relationship with each other, day in and day out, is not warm, not affectionate, not supportive, not patient or tender nor pleasurable, then they simply come pretty close to simply wasting their time on the child's Catholic education. Now, there are exceptions. There are always some young people who come from badly fractured families who still end up being very religious. A natural gift, a natural attraction for what is religious is given to them. Somehow, in some way, they manage to overcome, to transcend the difficulties that the family conflicts created for their religious life. But on the average, it is very, very hard to substitute for a warm, affectionate relationship between a mother and a father. And it's very, very difficult to undo the ill effects when that kind of relationship is absent in the home. Now, the language that Jesus uses today in the gospel is terribly strong. It's frightening. He does not, of course, literally mean that people should pluck out their eyes or tear off their hands or do anything so dramatic. But rather, what he is saying is that it is very, very simple and easy to mislead little children or simple believers. And yet, I guess maybe from training in the old days, there are still so many parents today, unfortunately, who are still convinced that it is primarily the work of the priest or the religious educator or the nun or sister in the school or the religious instruction class to pass on to their children the religious faith. They are wrong. These parents are simply wrong. Priests, sisters, Catholic schools, prep classes, religious educators, all do have their own important part to play in the religious formation of the child. But they cannot do the job by themselves. They must have that strong foundation of the family to begin with. And in the absence of some kind of good religious example at home, all of the other sources of religious formation will find themselves with a difficult It's simply not an impossible task. And if there is at home bickering, vindictiveness, exploitation, and any kind of continuing nastiness between husband and wife, then all the efforts of the Catholic school or the religious educator will be even more difficult, and the outcome will be problematic. The lot of parents is, as I've said so often, the most difficult vocation in America today. And it's painful for parents to hear what is being said now. It is much easier, as I said last Sunday, for parents or people of any age always to blame the church for the failure to pass on religious values to their children. The church always makes a very, very fine scapegoat. But it does not have much of a chance of doing anything if the primary religious educators, the parents, whom the children encounter first of all in the most formative years of their lives, if those people, the parents, do not provide the right kind of affectionate, patient, generous love. Right now in this room, among all of us here, we would discover that each of us is at a different level of faith development at this very moment, no matter what age we are at. Some would be at the experienced level of faith that simply comes from interaction with people of faith. This is usually where children are. Their faith is being caught by them from their parents through the interaction with their parents and other people in the faith community. Others among us here are now at the stage where our faith is received at a level of affiliation. We all have a need to belong, to identify with a community of people who believe the same thing. And that is especially strong in adolescence. Although many, many adults, to the day of their death, do not pass beyond that stage. And I also know some clergy who are still at that stage. Then you have what is called a searching level of faith. It means that in order to move on from understanding the faith handed on to you by your parents, or the faith given to you by the entire faith community, there must come a time in your life when you learn to doubt and to question just about everything important in your faith. You must go through that, because unless you do, the faith will never become your own. It'll never become internalized. And that's why your parents should understand that when your youngsters come to that stage, it is very healthy and very wholesome. They must internalize what they have been taught in theory by you and other teachers and make it their own. That is called owned faith. It is a conversion experience which usually goes on slowly, a gradual acceptance, until finally the person says, "Yes, I do believe." And so every single weekend when we come here to worship, we are surrounded by people struggling at different levels of faith, trying to apply what gives meaning to our lives according to what we have received. We are surrounded by people who are restless and hungry and thirsty. And what they all need is a friend whose living faith has made a difference in that friend's life. For a child, it is your friendship to your children as parents. And all of you this afternoon should feel fortunate that someone in your life handed the faith on to you, because otherwise you wouldn't be here. That gift is now yours to hand on to others.